Greetings, lovely listeners. You are listening to Saga, a podcast where a dude and a chick discuss art and animation.
And thank you for listening to Saga Podcast. This is your favorite host, Sarah and Garrison. And we're back again after several weeks of not doing anything because we've been too busy doing other stuff, you know, non-coronavirus related and non-podcast related. So today, I think we are going to just dive right into a movie that we recently watched. It is called A Silent Voice. This is a really, really cool anime film on Netflix. So easily access it if you have the service. It is a beautiful animation, I would say.
Spoiler alert, this audio may contain spoilers, so please proceed with caution or an open mind. I don't care.
To get right on to it, the plot is, I would say, one that may need a trigger warning for those of you who have, like, maybe suicidal tendencies or something along those lines, because it does deal with suicide. The story is a young man named Shoya Ishida is a student, and he gets involved in the life of a deaf classmate, Shoko. He bullies her for her impairment, and eventually she is transferred because of the young man. Later, they meet again after Shoya decides to commit suicide, and as a part of his resolve, he needs to apologize for his past deeds against Shoka. So, yeah. This cover kind of covers a lot of bases in as far as, like, minorities, maybe? I don't know if that's the right word, but, you know, it covers deaf impaired, covers maybe, like, mentally scarred people or, like, you know, mentally diseased people. I don't know if that's a good word for that either, but kind of mental, yeah, I would say, like, mental depression, maybe. A lot of depression. Although this film is super bubbly, kind of airy as far as the style, it is very beautiful. I don't know that it really portrays depression, so it doesn't really make you super sad, but it does cover a lot of that, like, build up to actual suicide. I don't know, Garrison, do you think I'm getting this point across well? Because I feel like I'm kind of trying to hit it out the ballpark, but I'm not.
Yeah, that's definitely like a three strikes you're out kind of a ramble tangent that went on. But so you're saying that this film covers topics that about deaf people and like depression, things like that, which, well, depression is sort of becoming more mainstream in the past few years, it seems. But are you saying that this film, because it kind of looks inviting in a certain way, which, like, contrasts to the subject matter, it, like, it sort of puts your guard down or something? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely feel like the subject matter versus, like, the actual viewpoint of this film is totally different. And that could be kind of the reason for it, because, you know, a lot of people may not know that they're depressed. So life just goes on, and you, like, I could be depressed one day and then be like, well, bye. Just kidding. I wouldn't do that.
Right. Yeah. Because you hear often about friends and family, you know, one day they're hanging out with them, you know, having a good time, and the next day they end themselves, and it's like they want to spend like one last good time with the people closest to them, but like you'll never know because like the way that they act on the outside isn't how they feel on the inside.
Right, right. It's like Bennington is, I think it's Bennington from Linkin Park, the lead singer, and Anthony Bourdain. Like, no one knew what was going on with them, but yeah.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. So your initial thoughts when you watched this?
I really think that this film is a really good film to watch, but I do think it is super sad. Like, it is a very sad film. It deals with a lot of very complex emotions, and there's a lot of bullying in it. There's a lot of, like, really sad narcissism from kids. It's just, like, it's kind of cringy in some ways. I don't know. What about you?
I think this movie does kids well, in that behaviors aren't inherent in people. They have to be, like, learned, like, taught. And the kids, you know, they don't really have, they're not fully aware of how their actions can affect other people a lot of the times. And when I watched this, the kids, like, really, like, pissing me off. Like, I saw them as, like, a bunch of sociopaths, but then I took a step back and I just, you know, I saw them as kids, and they don't really know any better. And I actually watched this video from the anime dude. He did this character analysis on the bully girl character, and right. He's saying that she had a crush on Shoya. And okay, so like Shoya, okay, so the girl was was nice to Shoko at first, right? Like she wrote her notes and things like that, but it wasn't until Shoya started messing with her that, like, that she also started messing with her.
I see.
And years later, when Shoya wanted to make amends to Shoko, the girl felt that Shoko was, like, back in the past. Like, she felt that she was responsible for, like, breaking up the whole friend group and like making Shoya sad and stuff. So she kind of had her reasons, not great reasons, but she had her reasons for not liking Shoko.
Right. They may have been misguided reasons, but yeah, I could see that. She seemed very out for vengeance towards the end.
Yeah. She, several times she stated that she, like, thought that Shoko was, like, faking her, like faking her submissive attitude and, like, trying to, like, take Shoya from her.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess she felt threatened in that way.
I could see that. Yeah, there's a lot of different characters in this anime as well. That's another thing to consider, is, like, there's a lot of different characters at play, and so many so that it's no wonder that Shoko was kind of driven to what she wanted to do, really. You know, especially leave the school or, you know, transfer, because her entire class was against her. You know, no one stuck up for her. And all of the characters that we saw, even the teacher, you know, and waited until the very last second, till she was completely gone, basically, before he stuck up for her. And I think it was everybody's fault that she was driven to lash out.
Yeah, I wonder if that was, like, a commentary on, like, you may not have shot the gun, but you were still around watching when you could have done something. You did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were all kind of complicit in the situation. And the blonde one with the glasses, there was a few times where she said that, like, you know, that was all Shoko, you know, I did nothing, But yeah, she did do something by doing nothing. She could have did something.
I mean, the fact that they threw away 8 hearing aids was absolutely ridiculous. Like, if I was a teacher and I saw that, I would, oh my gosh, I'd probably come very close to frustratingly hurt a child because of how rude that is.
Right. And that those first few minutes were pretty irritating for me.
Right. And you said that they jump 5 years, because that's one thing I didn't really, maybe I wasn't paying attention, but I didn't really know how long it was between the time that Shoko moved and transferred and when Shoya came to come and find her again. It seemed like a long time.
Yeah, 5 years. It was 5 years.
Okay.
So if you noticed, the sounds were like super crisp. Like, I didn't notice it on like the first time that I watched it, but I saw clips later and like the sounds were like really like crisp. And I think that was intentional, like for the movie, because of like, you know, the whole hearing thing and just like the viewer picking up on like subtle sound cues. I think that was really clever.
Interesting. That is really cool. I don't know. Did you watch this movie in Japanese or did you watch it in English dub?
In English, like most, like if there's an English version, like I'll usually, like 80% of the time, I'll watch it in English if it's available. But I don't mind watching it subbed, but I did watch this in English.
So one thing that I found interesting about the English was that the voice actor for Shoko is actually a deaf or hearing impaired individual. Her name, Lexi Marmon. And I didn't really actually care for the voice actor in English because I don't know, maybe it's just like they made her sound like she was too childish or something. Like it was very hard to distinguish what she was saying, but maybe that was on purpose. But the actress Lexi, she has a pretty extensive background in acting. And so she's, you know, she's awesome for what she does. I don't know if I understand fully the direction they were going for. Like, it was like, maybe she was like newly deaf or she was born deaf. So she's never heard her voice before. So she can't speak that well. But the direction I think was like, it made it, I think, even worse to watch Shoko's character deal with the things that she was going through because she wasn't able to be understood. She wasn't able to be heard unless it was something to be written down or, you know, like to sign. But most people didn't know how to sign, or she just couldn't hear them or hear the backstabby things that they were saying to her or behind her back, quite literally. So it was very hard to see that. And that I feel like is another thing to really note in this movie as like a trigger warning. You know, it's rough. It's pretty rough for Shoko.
Right. And so there was a scene at the amusement park when she was on the Ferris wheel and Shoko said that, you know, she hated herself. And I'm thinking that like when they showed them as young kids, the abuse, like, I guess like she felt guilty or something that she wasn't like other kids. And I guess she blamed that on herself instead of like realizing that, you know, that was out of her control. And that wasn't something that she had to worry about. And I guess, you know, that really had an effect on her. And her younger sister, was a mature kind of like a guardian for her and protected her from like people that I guess she saw as threats.
I think it's just like after the initial like seeing what Shoka and Shoya's relationship was in the very beginning, the rest of the movie is basically Shoya making up to Shoko. Like, I'm so sorry. I did all those horrible things to you when we were kids, but here we go now. I'm making up for it so I can go commit suicide. RIP.
Yeah, was Shoya making up to Shoko more for her or for him, do you think?
I think it was definitely for him. He felt so bad that he did those things to her and ruined his own life in the process, that he was like, yeah, I gotta make up for this, because if I don't, I'm gonna just commit suicide in vain, or it will just be selfish. It will be a more selfish act than it would be had he not done that.
You could say that nothing would have changed for him if he didn't also lose his friend circle. And I think, in a way, because he was isolated and alienated from people, like, he couldn't hear the voices of others in the same way that Shoko, you know, can't really hear voices. So in some way, Shoya kind of understood Shoko more and then wanted to, like, make it up to her in some way.
Yeah, that definitely, I think, is towards the end what I noted, because Shoya is, like, one of the only people that can fully understand what Shoko is going through and how she feels. And I think that's what ends up saving the both of them, because they have shared trauma or shared ideations, maybe. So they become friends out of that pain.
When Shoya, like, first tried to end it when he was on that bridge, but he didn't, like, why didn't he do it there?
I think he just wanted to make up for what he did. I can't remember. He was like, I am just...
Okay. That makes sense. And so, like, the fireworks, like, snapped him out of it. And so when, you know, Shoko was about to end herself, there's fireworks going on. And I think leading up to that point, Shoya realized what it was to live, because at that point, when he was first trying to kill himself, that's when he had his wall up. Like, he couldn't look people in their eyes, and the X's were on their faces. But it wasn't until, like, meeting Shoko and, you know, accruing new friends and reuniting with old ones, that he knew what it was to live again. And he wanted to give that to Shoko, and I guess that, you know, for one, he didn't want a friend to die, and two, he wanted her to experience and understand there's more to, like, life, I guess.
Right. Yeah, this is a very complex, beautiful, but very complex. I think I kind of want to, like, say certain things to, like, look out for, you know? Like, if people know somebody that might be, like, going through something. Like, this sounds really depressing. Like, this whole episode's been kind of depressing. I kind of want to, like, say things to look out for, like, have issues that they're working on of suicide or suicidal, like, ideation. So, like, certain things, and this isn't from a source, I don't have a good source in front of me, but, like, these are just signs from the movie that expressed to me things to look out for, like selling everything of significance, you know, like if your friend is being like, hey, can I sell this thing to you? I've got a bunch of stuff I need to give away, or, you know, like they're just trying to get rid of everything just to purge it. You know, they quit their job, they stop coming around. They maybe don't see family or friends as often, and they isolate themselves to themselves, then those are just good signs to look out for, you know?
What was I going to say? So I have a couple, like, notes. This movie really felt like a saga. So this movie is a little over 2 hours long, and it really felt like the chronicles of like someone's life in some ways. It spans along like several years basically, and there were a couple of times where it felt like the movie could end there, but it kept going, and I thought that was cool because it was like, you know, there are moments in life where if life were a movie, it could end certain places, but it doesn't. And like, you know, it's life, so it keeps going. And I thought that was pretty cool for the movie. And also, if there's any takeaway, I guess, besides what you just mentioned, is that also it doesn't really matter what you did in your past. You can always make an effort to make it better, to be a better person now. And Shoko had every reason not to forgive Shoya, but she did, and we see the grandmother for a brief moment in the film, and she seems like the person that's had the most influence on Shoko and her sister. And yeah, so I think that she got her like values from her a lot. She was a strong person. She endured a lot, and I've read comments like saying that she was a doormat and that she should have done more. You know, maybe that's not how she was raised. And she did step up when Shoya like put his hands on her and they were like fighting on the desk. So yeah. She does like step up when she needs to, I think.
Yeah. It just doesn't seem like violence to her is like the answer. Like, she's very pacifist, but that doesn't mean that like she's choosing not to be violent. That isn't that she is not like she's a doormat. Like, I think a lot of people mistake kindness for softness, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't think that's necessarily true. I think it's harder to be kind in a lot of situations than it is to do the opposite, be a jerk.
Definitely. I feel like there's a lot we can say about this, but I'm kind of at a loss for words now.
Yeah, I mean, this, you know, like, how would you rate this film? Okay, let's wrap it up with that. Like, how would you rate this as far as, like, animation, as far as writing, and as far as your own personal enjoyment from this film?
First, let me say a couple of, like, trivia facts about the movie first. So this was directed by Naoko Yamada. She also did some work on like some animation and directorial work on K-On!, which is like a girl band kind of a series. Free, which I think is that like swimming or something, a swimming series, I think. And The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya, which is great. I didn't get to finish the series, but it's pretty good. And this was screenwritten by Reiko Yoshida, who has a prolific 25-year working experience as a writer, you know, working on over 100 different projects.
That's a lot. That's a lot of work.
And this was by Kyoto Animation. Kyoto Animation was the studio from last year, 2019, that got burned down and people lost their lives.
Oh man, that's right. I forgot about that. Okay.
And this movie is also named The Shape of Voice, I guess, translation or whatever, based on a manga of the same name from 2013 to 2014. Makoto Shinkai, director of, wait, oh yeah, okay, all right, so I wrote this. Why? Yeah, so Makoto.
Wait, is it? Yeah, who's it directed by?
Yeah, Makoto Shinkai, who directed Your Name, called the film a fantastic piece of work and a polished and grand production, which he even is unable to replicate. So that's pretty high praise coming from the guy that made Your Name.
Yeah, definitely.
And many, if not most, of the places are real places. Like, there's a video out there of like a side by side comparison of the real place And it's really faithful. It's pretty cool looking at like the real places that the places in the movie take place.
Okay, awesome. So, okay, go on with your rating.
I give it an 8. Confusion in the editing a bit, and some of the visual choices kind of confusing a little bit. So I give it like an 8. Good, definitely recommend. And I think like this for an anime movie just works as a plain movie. And I think that you can show people that aren't into this kind of stuff and then show it to them, and I think that they'll like it.
I agree with that. That's definitely a good assessment of this movie. Yeah, I think I would give it like an 8.5, probably a little bit higher than that, just because it's like, and that's what I've noticed, you know, I think we've had discussions about Japanese style of comics and animation versus like Western stuff. You know, everything is slower. Everything is slowed down. You really have to grasp like the entire emotion if you're going to like a Japanese style combination, because that's all everything that they're about, and this movie definitely does that. And I think that's why it's so complex, and like there are probably words in Japanese to express all of these, but there's no way we have those in English.
Right. And you mentioned, we mentioned this, I think, a few times in, like, the structure of, like, Japanese storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember reading something a while ago. I'll have to read it again, but it's interesting. And it's like, the way that the story happens, it's called Kensho Tenket, which is, like, four different, like, phases of this story. There's Ken, there's Sho, there's Ten, and Kets, which is the way that the story happens. And you can look more into that on your own, but it's interesting and it's different from the three act story structure that you've heard, or mm-hmm. the hero's journey that like Dan Harmon and other people use. So it's something unique and interesting.
So on that note, what are we going to do next week?
Next week, you say?
Yeah.
I think, was it James Baxter, I think?
The artist.
Oh, yeah. The artist, James Baxter.
All right, cool. And we're off.
Thank you for listening to Saga Podcast, where we talk about animation and animation things. This is your favorite co-host, Sarah, and I would like to remind you before you head off that we do have a Twitter, a Facebook, an Instagram, a website, and soon to be a Patreon. So if you could reach out to us, leave us a comment, a review, anything that you like, and we will appreciate all of it. Otherwise, have a wonderful week, and we will see you next time.
Bye. See you next time. I hope you liked it. Come again.